Shall we make a start then? Well, it's great to see you. Thanks very much for coming. I thought maybe there might not be hardly anybody here. So it's amazing to see you. Thank you very, very much. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Sheila, and I've been involved with Activate for quite a long time. I wasn't here last year because I wasn't very well last year, of which you'll probably hear more later on in this seminar. But just to let you know what this seminar is about, in case you've come to the wrong one, I'm going to be talking about how do we bring our whole self into God's presence. There's still some seats at the front, ladies, and if you come around here, if you're looking for spaces to sit, and you don't need to sit on the floor at the back if you don't want to, but if you're comfortable, that's fine. So I'm going to be talking about how do we bring our whole selves into God's presence all the time. You'll see that the Activate book is called Unlocking the Door, and I'm actually going to be talking about three keys into God's presence and three keys that help us be at home in God's presence all the time or have God at home in our lives. I'm never quite sure which way around that goes. John 15, verse 5 says, I am the vine and you are the branches. If you remain in me, you will bear much fruit. Now, where's the instruction in that verse? What verb is the instruction in that verse? Remain. Remain. Be. If you remain in me, you will bear much fruit. An awful lot of us think that the instruction is bear much fruit. Bearing much fruit is the consequence. Have you ever seen an apple tree standing there going, I must bear fruit? It's a ridiculous notion, isn't it? They don't try to bear fruit. They remain rooted in the ground. And so what I'm going to be talking about is how do we do that? How do we become aware of God's presence in the whole of our lives? And how do we bring the whole of our lives to God's presence? Just a little bit about me in case you don't know who I am. My name, as I said, is Sheila, and now I am a full-time minister. So I'm an Anglican vicar, and I run a church in Rugby. And it's a little tiny church. I'm a pioneer minister because my church is in Last Chance Saloon, which means there's not very many of us and we need to grow. One of the things that happens when you become a vicar is that they have this rather wonderful service in which they install you. And one of the things they do is they give you a set of keys. They give you a symbolic set of keys, but these are my actual church keys. As you can see, they're fairly complex. And I do know what every single one of them does. And it's a job to remember all of that. So you'd be pleased to know that I'm only going to talk about three keys. But it was partly being in that new job, being in a difficult situation, that made me realise, made me think hard about these three keys. Now, we're just past Easter, so Christmas is absolutely the last thing on your mind. So apologies for this first story, but I want to just take you back to Christmas of last year. Just after Christmas, in the Anglican Church, we celebrate Epiphany, which is the story where the three kings come to visit Jesus. And each of the three kings has a gift to bring to Jesus. And I was due to preach on this the Sunday after Christmas, and after Christmas most vicars are pretty exhausted, so that week between the Christmas services and then the next Sunday I was pretty exhausted, but I was thinking, oh, I've got to preach on the following Sunday. And this story really burned in my mind, the idea that the three kings brought something to Jesus to come into his presence. And I really turned over in my mind the idea of what can I bring? I don't know about you, but you've perhaps been brought up with the notion that you don't bring anything to God's presence, you know, only to the cross I cling, I don't bring anything to God's presence. But I was really struck by the idea that actually, maybe there is some part that I have to play, something that I have to bring. And I had got quite a long way towards what would have been an absolutely cracking sermon when I discovered that I wasn't actually down to preach that day anyway. I had just not read my own rota, which I'd written. But that was just par for the course, really, because I was in a new job. I'd only been there a month. I was under quite a lot of stress. I'd just moved house. I'd just got through Christmas. And I couldn't even read my own rota. So for a while, having invested 3 or 4 hours in this sermon, I was quite cross with God. You know, why, Lord, were you giving me all these deep and profound thoughts about these gifts to bring to God when I'm not even down to preach? And eventually, of course, the answer came, and it was this: Sheila, I don't want you to preach on it. I want you to live it. And I didn't really realise the significance of that when that was said to me, because I can honestly say I have now lived these three keys through the whole of 2014, a lot of which was a very difficult year for me. So what you're about to hear is not some rehashed sermon, but something that I have actually really lived and learned to live with. And I've learned that these three keys help me come into God's presence and help me keep an awareness of God's presence through the whole day. So if you like, I'm going to talk about them as keys. You could refer to them as attitudes, but they're what we can bring to an encounter with God that will help us realize that He is there. So I began by thinking about the things that we're supposed to bring. And the Bible tells us that the first thing, the first key that unlocks God's presence is faith. Hebrews 6 tells us that without faith, it's impossible to please God. So let's read that in a modern version. In the Message version, it says, it's impossible to please God apart from faith. And why? Because anyone who wants to approach God must believe both that He exists and that He cares enough to respond to those who seek Him. Now, sometimes we make a bit too much of faith. We talk about having faith. We talk about perhaps not having enough faith. Perhaps we look at other people and we think, oh, I wish I had your faith. I want to say to you that faith simply means turning with some kind of an awareness or trust or hope even that there might just be someone we're actually turning to. Faith is simply turning with some kind of an awareness or trust or hope that there might be someone we're turning to. You don't have to understand that someone in order to have faith. You don't have to understand God. You don't have to even feel that you know Him terribly well in order to have faith. If faith is that act of turning and acknowledging that I'm not actually alone, that there might be somebody there listening. You see, we do get awfully screwed up about the idea of having to have faith. And worrying and feeling that if we don't have enough, and we question ourselves when things don't go well, we say to ourselves, well, perhaps I didn't have enough faith. Well, Jesus only ever asked us to have the faith of a mustard seed, which is tiny. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I think, have I even got that much faith? I'm not sure. But yes, Lord, I can believe that when I turn to you and I pray, you are there. We mustn't put ourselves under pressure to produce faith, because the Bible also says that faith is a gift. And I really believe that faith is a gift often given to people who are complete unbelievers and complete unaware of God. And sometimes one of the things we can do is help them notice that actually they're having faith. How many times has someone said to you, well, I believe that everything happens for a reason? Loads of people have faith in that phrase. Okay, so why does it happen for a reason? So who's planned it then? Help them to see that they're living in faith. That's a bit of an aside. But Jesus says we should only have this little bit of faith, and that we can demonstrate that faith by turning to God. Now, we can turn to God in desperation. We can turn to God even when we have no sense of being in God's presence. We can even shout at God. We can rail at God. Even the act of shouting at God is an act of faith, because it is showing belief that someone is there and listening. If you don't believe that, you need to read through the Psalms, because more than half of them are ordinary people's experience of confusion. Where are you, God? They're shouting at God. But nearly always they come round to, but you're there. At least you're there. And I can believe you're there. So we don't have to generate some sense of firm belief. We don't have to generate some confidence. We don't have to try to get ourselves into some serene state of mind. How likely is that? Not very, in my case. You know, it's not easy. Don't feel that if you're not in that place, you haven't got faith. That's not what it's about. It's the act of turning and trusting that you're not alone, that the universe is not an empty place, that there is someone listening to you, even when you cry out in pain. Now, I did tell a story 2 years ago when I was last speaking at the Activate conference. So I don't know, some of you might remember it. It was the story of a film. You might have heard this bit before, but in our house, David always watches, I'm married to David, by the way, and he's, sorry, I didn't mention him before. And he always gets to choose what film we watch. And we always have to watch a boy film. And do you know the kind of, I mean, the sort of hero dad films, where there's always a plot, and there's always baddies, and aliens preferably, and always a love interest, and then there's always the world's about to end, and then it all gets resolved, and medals are awarded, and you know, that kind of film. So David came home and said, oh, got a film at the supermarket, it's a sci-fi, and I thought, oh yeah, heroes, aliens, whatever, Saturday night, we sit down and watch this film. Well, I think it's probably the worst film I've ever watched. Actually, the only really enjoyable bit about watching this film was David's complete bafflement, because there was no hero, there was no aliens, there was no love interest, there was virtually no plot. So I'm going to plot spoil a bit, but I'm going to spare you the experience of ever having to watch this film. So, you know, you'll be grateful. So here's a summary of the film. An astronaut is sent up into a space station, and it's a solo mission. And the astronaut goes round and round the world, and at first he has radio contact with the world, but mysteriously, suddenly, all contact with his station on Earth ceases. And from that moment on, there is no one else in the film. No one. And you're only 10 minutes in. And what happens for the next hour and 38 minutes is that you watch this man going slowly mad over a period of 6 years, pressing a button going, Capcom, do you receive me? Capcom, do you receive me? And nobody ever does. Nothing happens. It's the most depressing film ever. If you want an hour and a half of existential misery, get this film. Do you know what it's called? The title they gave it? It's called Love. Yeah, that's the perfect face. Thank you. Right. What? It's called Love because there is no love in this film. It was so depressing. It was rated a 15. And I actually think it deserved that rating because it was so barren and so appalling. You watch this man going mad and you realise that there was no point in his existence. There were no other human beings left in the universe. There was no one listening. He was alone. And the morning after I watched that film, I woke up and I had such joy in my heart because I said, I'm not alone. I am not alone. That is the good news. That is the essence of the Christian message. I am not alone. I'm not a meaningless blob. I'm not a few cells in a tiny dot in history. I am the created child of the God of the universe, and he knows me and he cares about me. And that is amazing. Don't let's forget that, because so many people around us live with the experience of the man in the tin can. They feel alone. Nobody hears them. The act of faith is pressing that button and saying, Capcom, do you hear me? God, do you hear me? And having God say, yeah, yeah, I'm here. So, faith. Faith is believing that God is there and he's listening. That's the first key. So what's the second key that we bring to this encounter with God? The second key is the word allegiance. First of all, I thought of the word loyalty, because kind of, as women, we feel a little bit more comfortable with the word loyalty. Allegiance is a bit of a masculine word, isn't it? But no, I wanted to use the word allegiance because I think it's a bit stronger and it means something more. You know, dogs are loyal, aren't they? And friends are loyal, you hope. But allegiance is a bit more than just loyalty. Allegiance says, it sort of has resonances for me. If you can picture, and I'm sorry I haven't got a fancy PowerPoint, otherwise you would have seen a picture of this, but anyway, picture a knight in his armour, a knight in his armour, and he's laying down his sword, and he's bowing and he's kneeling before the king. That to me is allegiance. It's bringing all that I am, all of my gifts, all of my energies, it's bringing my life, it's risking myself and saying, my liege, my lord, you rule, you reign, I'm bringing myself to you. And allegiance is this second key. We have to bring ourselves to God with all that we are, our skill, our talents, our abilities, our connections, and we say, Lord, you are my master. I'm going to put you first above every other claim in my life. Here's my life in your service. Coming with that sense of commitment. Early Christians, the very first creed that was ever taught was just the phrase, Jesus is Lord. Because in those early few hundred years of Christianity, what everybody said when they met everybody else was, Caesar is Lord. So it was enormously risky to say, Jesus is Lord. Could have got you thrown to the lions. But that's the first creed, the first statement of belief that those early Christians say. And Jesus asks for this commitment. We know that, don't we? Because we know of phrases like, take up your cross and follow me. And we know that being a Christian is not a life of half measures. And you can't just say, well, Jesus is a great example, and I'll just kind of add a little bit of Jesus to my life and a little bit of Christianity to the mix of everything else, and that'll be okay. When Jesus calls people to follow him, he calls for our complete allegiance. And he gave that call to those early disciples. He said, you know, to give up your whole lifestyle, to give up your well-being, your lives as fishermen, and come and follow me. And give away what you had, maybe to disappoint those nearest to you. We know, don't we, from Romans that we're called to be living sacrifices and to offer ourselves as our bodies as spiritual worship. And that's from that verse that's our key verse for this weekend, the Romans 12 verse, which Lawrence read to us earlier this morning about take your everyday, going to sleep, ordinary life, your eating, sleeping, going to work and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Now, I do love that translation, but it does kind of imply that you could be a Christ follower and kind of have your life go on as normal. Whereas I guess I'm saying that actually allegiance to God requires that he takes first place, and we therefore shouldn't be divided. But what if that sounds to you just like do more, work harder, have less fun? What if that sounds to you like that? And it might do, because there is a risk with this second key, and I'm about to come on to that. What if it feels like in your world everybody wants a little piece of you, and there isn't enough pieces of you to go around? Have you had that feeling? Maybe your children, maybe your neighbours, maybe your elderly parents, maybe your friends, everybody, your workmates, everybody wants a piece of you and there isn't enough to go around. I said that to God at the start of 2014. And so just after that Christmas where I wrote this sermon that I never preached, not long after that, I actually became ill. It wasn't really that surprising because I had had a very stressful period in my life. I'd had so much change in a very short period of time. And all it took was for me to go down with one virus that laid me low. But of course, I was in a new job. I was a new vicar in this struggling church. They'd not had a vicar for 8 years. Oh boy, were their expectations of me high. I mean, they would have taken anybody, basically, so long as I didn't have two heads. I was just the most amazing thing since sliced bread. The expectation of that was huge. It was overwhelming. The sense of, you know, you've got to come in here and make all the difference. And what did I do? I came in there and I fell flat on my face. Because that's what God did. After a week of being ill, I tried to get out of bed. Within a week, I was back in bed again. I was actually ill for at least 7 weeks. I was really poorly. I missed this conference because of it. I just could not get off the sofa. I was really, utterly exhausted and drained. And I felt useless. Utterly useless. Why, God, have you put me in this job where you've called me to, and now this? I can't. All these people who have expectations of me, all these people who want little pieces of me, and I've got nothing. Here's me and the dog on the sofa. It's very hard. What began as a physical illness, which it was, of even just being physically ill, don't ever forget that it has emotional consequences, it has spiritual consequences. So by the time I'm 3 or 4 weeks into this, I'm thinking, God, where are you? Is this going to turn into chronic fatigue? I reached a point where I thought, I'm sitting in a vicarage. I've moved into this vicarage. Am I going to have to move out? Can I do this job? The whole of our lives have been turned upside down so that I can live in this house and do this job, and here I am, I can't do it. What am I going to do, God? Very, very dark and scary place to be. And although I was only actually off and ill for that period of time, it's taken me a lot longer to recover. And I would say I'm still recovering, okay? So I'm still learning to balance my life. But that's where this message has come out from. So I said to God, I can't do it. I can't do it. All these people want bits of me and I haven't got anything to give. I haven't got anything to give. And Jesus said to me, Sheila, I don't want a little piece of you. I want all of you. Just give all of yourself to me and leave me to worry about whether there's enough of you left over or enough of you to go round. I want all of you just the same. Sounds like a hard thing to say to somebody who's on the sofa and who's got nothing to give anyway. But it was very important. And I realised at that point that God had given me something I didn't want. And that is the gift of limitations. You might have heard that you should accept your limitations, that to live a well-balanced life, you should acknowledge and accept your limitations. Accept isn't a strong enough word. You need to embrace your limitations. Your limitations are God's gift to you. That's a hard thing to learn. What are your limitations? I'm going to shut up for a moment. When you say to God, I could do this, but I'd love to do that, but I can't do this because I'm not well enough. I haven't got enough money. I've got other people who need me. I've got to juggle my children. I've got to look after X, Y, Z. Can you receive those things as a gift? They are the gift of your limitations. They're not a pain, they're not a nuisance, they're part of your life. And God wants all of your life. The gift of my limitations for that period of time was for me ill health. What did that do for my little congregation? It made some of them step up to the plate. It made them realise that they hadn't got somebody who was some super strong person, that actually we all need to work together if this little church is going to go anywhere. That Sheila isn't the amazing person that she thought, that they all thought she was when she first arrived. Boy, is that a relief. It was incredibly freeing. It allowed them to love me. It allowed them to recognise that I was weak and that I was failing. And it allowed me to say to them, I want this church to be a place where it's okay to not be okay. Really. That's one of our catchphrases at our church. It's okay to not be okay. Really. We have to bring our limitations to God. They are part of who we are. They're actually God's gift to us. Now I've gone off script and I've forgotten what I'm supposed to be saying. The risk with this second key, the risk is I look around and I see lots of very, very faithful Christians who are good at allegiance. Their hard work cannot be questioned. You know, they are so hardworking. They're always there. They're always on the rotor for this, that, and the other. They're always doing everything. But they are bone weary, exhausted. They are not warmed. They are not thrilled. They are not comforted by God's presence in their life. They are just weary. And they are characterized more by determination than joy. Now, I know the value of determination. I personally have cut out 25 face masks for messy church in 22 minutes. You need to have determination to do a task like that. Sometimes it is only that inner determination that will get you through some jobs. You have to have self-discipline. You have to stand in front of the person who wants to talk to you for ages, and they've got a cup of tea and you haven't got a cup of tea. And you think, I just want to get to the coffee bar, please let me get a cup of tea, and then I don't mind you telling me all your woes and ills forever and ever. You just need that inner grit sometimes, and we all find it, but it's not good to be in that place all the time, to live out of that place. It can leave us feeling very cold, very uncomforted, and we can become very resentful of all the demands. And actually, God can just begin to feel like just one other demand, just another demand in my life. God wants me to do X. How am I going to fit that in? So we could get resentful. And the other danger, if we don't get resentful, is that we become too self-important. And we tend to think that the whole church will stop without us. Very, very important lesson. It won't. I learned that. It won't, amazingly. No, things might not happen the way you hope they would happen, but so what? The world hasn't ended, and it won't all collapse without you. We can think we're essential, and what we offer as service to God can actually turn very subtly into an attempt to impress God. So this is the risk with the second key. So that's not all there is to it then. Faith, allegiance, there's got to be something else. There's got to be something more. And as I thought about it, and this is perhaps where I've grown the most personally in the last year, the third key is worship. It's the gift of worship. It's worship that warms me. It's worship that transforms me. It's worship that reminds me who I am and where I stand in relation to God, and how small I am and how great He is. It's worship that puts me in the cleft of a rock, like God put Moses as His glory passed by. If I don't make space in my life for worship, I will become driven, exhausted, bone-weary. I will dry up without worship in my life. If I don't have time to contemplate the goodness and the love of God and the grace and the presence of God and the beauty in His world that He's placed me in, and I don't ever stop to give thanks for it or notice it, then I become like a robot. I'm just on a driven, task-driven treadmill, if you like. For me, there have been two disciplines that have really, really helped me with worship. And, before I get on to the disciplines, I'll tell you first of all, I used to despair of my prayer life, which is encouraging, because, you know, I'm a vicar, so I ought to have time. Oh, I've gone off. It says it's still got battery, but it doesn't appear to have. This won't amplify me, this is just recording me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Is Rachel in the room? No, there's not anybody here from the Activate team. I just wondered if somebody could have gone to say that the sound's gone off. Meanwhile, I'll just try and talk louder.
Did you just turn it off at the bottom by mistake?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Should we try it again?
No. Thanks, Fiona. Okay. Thanks, Fiona, she says into the microphone as if it will make any difference.
The cavalry are on their way.
Okay. Well, meanwhile, I'll just try and talk up. So my prayer life that's so poor, and I was despairing of this to a friend one day, and she said to me, Sheila, can you just turn up? And I said, I can probably do that. I can probably just turn up. You know, I used to beat myself up that I probably wasn't praying in the right way, or I probably wasn't saying the right words, or I probably didn't pray for long enough, or didn't pray for the right things, and that why wasn't God somehow doing what I wanted Him to do?
And this friend to me said, Sheila, just turn up. Just be in God's presence. And I found that amazingly releasing. All I have to do is just turn up. That, of course, does mean a little bit of self-discipline in saying I'm going to make time for that to happen. I'm going to show up. You know, I'm just going to show up in God's presence, and then I'm just going to wait to see what he's going to do. And for me, the two disciplines that I've really leaned heavily on in this last year have been the discipline of silence. I don't know about you, but does your brain chatter all the time? My brain chatters all the time. And I sit down to pray, and I find that actually I'm not praying, I'm actually just worrying. So now when I come to have that time with God, I do a couple of things that remind me that I'm in God's presence. First thing I do is I light a candle. There's nothing magical about the candle at all. It just says to me the candle represents the presence of the Spirit of God. When my mind drifts and wanders, I try to look back at the candle and think, hang on, I'm in God's presence here. I'm going to try and focus. And at the end of my time, however short, however long, and I don't beat myself up about it if it's not very long, I blow the candle out. And I say, you know, not goodbye, God, because he's coming with me. But, you know, it's like, it just creates that moment. And I try very hard to be silent. The only thing that you can do to come into silence is to start off by bringing yourself exactly as you are.
I can't make it work. I'm shouting the loudest I can, but if you could help, that would be brilliant. So I do need to come into God's presence and go, blah, 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 you know, everything. This is how I'm feeling, this is what I'm worrying about, this is what I'm angry about, this is what's going wrong. And then I just kind of slow down. And once I've said everything, or actually written it, which might take 5 or 10 minutes, but that's another very good way of getting it out of me, then I can just sit and be. Oh, thank you.
It was off of the wall.
How did that happen mid-talk? How strange. Okay, oh, that's a big help. Thank you. I don't think I could have kept that going all the way. Thank you very much. Okay. So that discipline. Don't try 25 minutes straight off. Try 2 minutes of just silence, first of all. Just try and be in God's presence. If you don't know what to do with silence, just breathe. Just become aware of your own body and just breathe in and out. Just breathe in and out. Just become aware of your breathing. And that's not something weird or strange or odd. It's just a way of stilling your mind. And you're stilling your mind in the presence of the Holy Spirit, and you're asking the Holy Spirit to do whatever he does. On my phone, I've got one of these little apps that probably some of you have got them. You know the apps that clean your phone up? You press a button and it boosts your phone, and it kind of throws out all the junk. And it's got this little dial and it goes, and it says, I've just cleaned out 425 megabytes of junk out of your phone. Sorry, you're not in the wrong seminar if you didn't come to one, to the digital thing. All right. But what that app does is that's what being still in God's presence does for me. I don't need to know what God's doing in my heart and my mind. I don't need to verbalize it. I'm trusting that he is resetting my heart and my mind. He's just clearing out the junk, okay? And getting me to a calmer and more resourceful place. And no matter how unprepared I am to go into my day, if I know I'm going in that calm place inside, that's the only thing that matters. I might have forgotten the piece of paper. I might have forgotten a note I've got to take, or I might have forgotten loads of things. But if I'm the calm person inside, that's all that matters. And the second discipline is mindfulness. Now again, that's a very, very easy, it's a very, very common theme. Loads of your non-Christian friends will feel very happy talking to you about mindfulness because it's really in at the moment. You can get apps for it. But it's perfectly Christian. It's just about meditation. It's about being in the now. How much of your time do you spend thinking about the past? Oh, I should have. Or do you spend thinking about the future? I could, or if, or when? How much of your time do you spend in the now? Right now. God wants to meet you right now, in the now. In fact, he can only meet you in the now. Not the past or the future. So don't waste energy in those two places. That's what Jesus said. Don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself. I want to meet you now. And for me, being in that now was learning the discipline of being thankful for every little tiny experience the moment it happened. Being thankful for my sofa. Being thankful for my dog who cuddled me. Being thankful for people who brought me soup. Just anything, just turning it into thankfulness in that moment, trying not to think about the past, trying not to think about the future, but just being thankful and grateful for every gift and noticing the beauty of the world. At one point, my husband took me away for a weekend and we stayed in a caravan, and I sat feeling really ill in a chair outside the caravan, and there were some little spring birds, and Jesus just said, "Consider the birds. Consider the birds. They don't reap. They don't reap what they don't sow. I'm looking after them. Just be still." So live with thankfulness. So that's my three keys, and that's my two disciplines that have helped me with that third key, silence and mindfulness. Now, just before I finish, I want to say to you that none of those things are terribly revolutionary, what I've said, but one of them will be hard for you. Which one is the hard one for you? Is it faith? If it's faith, please don't be daunted and think that you've got to summon up some serene state of mind. Remember, that's not what faith's about. Maybe it's the allegiance one. Maybe you do feel divided and torn and pulled in lots of different directions. Maybe you do feel that God is just one of those tensions in your life, something pulling you. Can you give everything you are to God and trust that in that he's doing something, even if the thing that you're giving him is a limitation? Can you receive that gift of that limitation? I have a close friend of mine at the moment. Her name's Edwina, and she's been ill with chronic fatigue since last September. She's in bed most days for about 6 hours, and she sleeps all night too, and often she sleeps for 18 hours. She's an incredibly intelligent, bright, wonderful, lovely friend, and I love her dearly, and I can't bear to see her so transformed and so low. I went to see her yesterday. I tried to walk her dogs once a week, and she said to me, I've become a bit like Katie in What Katie Did. I haven't read What Katie Did, but Katie apparently was an invalid for 2 years, but everybody came to her. And Edwina said, people come to me and they only stay for a few minutes, but I'm able to give them something. And I'm able to bless them and they go away with something. So, because I said this to her, I said, oh, last week I came and walked your dogs and you told me about so-and-so and that was really helpful. And yesterday I went and walked her dogs and she told me about somebody else who was a good connection. And I said, oh, I agree, you're such a brilliant, so many good ideas. And she said, you know, that's my gift now. I have nothing else to give. But she's being positive about it. I'm praying, of course, that she's going to get better, but she's accepting the gift of her limitation. And contemplation is accepting what is, whatever is what it is, accepting it and embracing it. Maybe it's worship that is hard for you. Maybe you do feel cold and distant and disappointed and bruised and let down and not sure if God really does love you or really does want you to sense his presence, all I'm asking you to do is to make space. Just turn up. Just make that space to be present to God in whatever way you can, even if it's only for a few minutes to begin with. Which one of those keys is the hardest for you? When I was on holiday a few years ago, I went to, and this is my last story, and then we're going to listen to a worship song, I hope. Yeah. We went on holiday to France, and we were skiing, actually, because it is all right to have fun. really is all right to have fun. God wants you to structure your life in a way that has fun in it, honestly. And we went on a chairlift, we went over this building, and it was an incredibly ugly building. It looked like a kind of warehouse with a big storage thing on the side. And I thought, wonder what that building is. It looks really, really ugly. And later that day, in the evening, I went for a walk around the village and I came across this building again. I thought, oh, where's this building? What is it? I went inside. It was a church. From the outside, it looked so ugly and uninviting, and it didn't seem to make any sense at all. From the inside, it was a beautiful wooden canopied tent that enclosed you, and right in the middle of the whole circular worship space was a church organ with the pipes shaped like a hand, and the hand pointed to heaven, and the hand said, "Worship leads you up to God." And you were drawn into this building, and I thought, that's what it's like for outsiders. They don't get God. They don't get being in the presence of God. They don't understand it. It looks like a building that doesn't make sense. It looks ugly. It looks unattractive. It's only when you've walked through the door of faith, when you've walked in, you get it. You think, oh, wow, I'm welcomed into God's presence. It's only when you've walked through that door of faith and you've turned up and you've made time, you've laid down yourself with your weaknesses and your limitations, and you say, "Here I am, God." I lied. I'm just going to give you one other thing, and that is three book recommendations, because I know some of you are very, very keen readers. I'm really sorry I wasn't organized enough to say put these on the book table. This is the very best book ever I have read in the whole of last year. John Ortberg, Soul Keeping, fantastic book. Comes across this sentence. While I was ill, I came across this sentence. Arrange your day to experience total contentment in your everyday life. John Ortberg tells you how to do that. How to be happy in God. Fantastic book, one of the best ones. If you get any of these three, that's the one. Pete Scazzaro, The Emotionally Healthy Church. I bring that one because his was the phrase, accept the gift of limitations. The gift of limitations. That comes in there. Pete Scazzaro, if you want to know how to spell it, come and look at it afterwards. And the last one, if you're struggling to know what to do with your life and you feel that you're always holding yourself back, this was very pivotal in my journey. This is called My Own Worst Enemy, and it's by Janet Davis. I think it's only available on Amazon. I think she's an American writer, but I did get it through Amazon. My Own Worst Enemy, Janet Davis. Those have been really helpful to me in my journey. We're just going to close. I've asked Hannah if she'd come and sing that beautiful song for us and join in if you know the words and where you know the words. It's Everything, God in My Everything, because it just seems so appropriate to what we've been talking about. And as we finish singing that, we'll just make our way to lunch.